Hello, hello, and welcome back to the Rooted Podcast. I'm your host, Cassandra. I know, I'm switching it up left and right. We have music today. I was just feeling it. So I think what I'm trying to do, and something that I talk about in this episode with Val, is just relinquish some control. Like, who honestly cares if some episodes have music and some don't? The vibe feels right, I'm going to add it. If the vibe doesn't feel right, I'm going to leave it out. So I hope you're enjoying the tunes. You guys are going to love this episode today. I am so thrilled, so honored to be able to share my friend Val with you on today's episode. She is such a wealth of knowledge, such a beautifully composed human. And I mean that in the way of, like, she's so raw, she's imperfect, she's hilarious, she is beautiful, though you guys won't know that because she's 100% anonymous on Instagram, which I think just makes her even more cool. We talk about living an authentic life, we talk about minimalism. You guys, there's nothing that we don't really touch on in this episode, and Val is just so self-aware and is always doing the work. But what I love about her so much is that in doing the work, she gives herself a lot of grace. A lot of grace to be human, a lot of grace to mess up, a lot of grace to witness herself actually living this life that is so chaotic at times. And just, you know, pivoting whenever she needs to. So she is a breath of fresh air. I really cannot wait for you to hear from her. I'm not going to elongate this intro any longer because the episode is about an hour and 15 minutes. It is so worth every single minute, though. So I hope you enjoy and see you on the other side. So you've been a favorite follow of mine for, oh my God, I don't even know when I started following you. I came across you after Joe, our mutual friend, yep, who we love so much. Hi, Joe.
Yes, love her.
I know, she's the best. But she posted something of yours and I was immediately drawn to you, even though your account is anonymous, which I want to touch on later in the episode. But first, can you give us a little backstory as to maybe who you are, what lights you up, your recent move?
Yes, happy to. So I actually think that you and I probably met about 3 years ago then, which is wild to me. The time just goes by so quickly. But because if I think back to when I started this account, it would have been in 2020, like maybe right after the pandemic was kind of announced globally. It started out as an account that was supposed to be more of like a space for me to talk a little bit about my minimalist approach to life. Mm-hmm. And I also wanted a space on Instagram to just kind of ramble and be myself in terms of the personal finance aspect of my personality. I found that there weren't a lot of like social circles where I felt as comfortable talking about that in real life.
Totally.
And I've obviously come a long way in terms of that piece. But at the time, it was more so to just be like, where can I combine all of my interests that include, for example, graphic design? Like, I really liked designing posts at the time, which is totally different from what my profile looks like today. Where can I talk about money management, retiring early, which again was a much bigger focus at the time, and then the minimalism piece. So I remember seeing a lot of other Instagram accounts through my personal page. They would come up on my like recommended for you. And one day I was like, let me just see what happens if I create a page. And following Joe at the time was kind of like my inspiration for just doing it and seeing where it went. And all these years later, it is still about those same topics, but I try to take much more of a realistic, this is just kind of how I'm showing up approach to it, rather than this super curated page with like the perfect colors and the perfect fonts. Like, I don't even like do graphic design anymore. I mean, I do it a lot for like my actual day job, but I found that that was actually sucking a lot of the fun out of it. So now I just kind of post whatever pictures I take. A lot of times it's pictures of like my cup of coffee and slap some text on the page.
Yeah. So yeah, such a good account for anyone who doesn't follow Val. It's at Pennies and Purpose. It's so, so good for so many reasons. But now I want to segue into way before Instagram was even a thing. I want to talk about
your childhood and your family life. So what was that like? You do talk about this in a fairly open way on your account, which I think is really powerful and really important for people who can relate and just don't really feel witnessed or seen in that sort of family dynamic. But would love for you to share as much or as little as you'd like here as well.
Yeah, for sure. I think I've also come a long way in terms of feeling more comfortable opening up about this to, you know, of course, a bunch of strangers on the internet. But long story short, so my parents actually immigrated here from another country back in the 80s. So there's a whole cultural layer that is added to all of this, which I'm sure a lot of listeners could relate to if they are from a similar boat. But I'm actually not in contact with a good chunk of my nuclear family, if you will. I cut off all contact with my mother a few years ago. It was just a really toxic relationship, which I could go into a lot of details there, but what I'll leave it at is that I think a lot of people actually have really tough relationships with their parents growing up, whether or not there is, you know, an added cultural layer. And we're not really given a whole lot of comfortable space to talk about it, or at least I never felt that way, because, you know, that mother-daughter relationship is like put on such a pedestal in our society. I'm actually working through a lot of this with my therapist right now, because what I'm learning about myself is, has anyone out there ever actually said to me, you know, it's horrible that you don't talk to your mother, or, you know, you're a bad person for setting that boundary, XYZ. Mm-hmm. And the reality is, a lot of that feeling is something that I project onto myself. It's not necessarily, you know, all these mean people out there saying horrible things to me about it, but there's a lot of internalized guilt that comes with setting a really clear and hard boundary with someone that societally you should have a close relationship with, because, you know, they brought you into this world. So I spend some time talking about that on my account to a degree, because as you can imagine, it does open up a whole can of worms, especially in the comments section. And I also want to be careful to guard my own space and my own feelings, and make sure that, you know, I'm just protecting myself. So tying this all into like all of the other things I talk about on my account, I think being financially independent and having, you know, a control of my own like money and my financial future is so closely tied with the journey that I've gone on in setting boundaries with family members, because a lot of times people don't have that, you know, that privilege of saying, you know, because this relationship doesn't suit me, I'm going to move on. A lot of times when money is built into that situation, it can be a lot harder to just detach yourself from a person and say, you know what, I'm out. And so I kind of try to tie those themes together, again, to a degree, because I know a lot of other people out there are in similar situations, but I also don't want to open the door to anyone who might have something not so nice to say about it, you know?
Totally. It's like self-preservation while still trying to remain somewhat open. Yeah. I mean,
for sure.
I feel that in such a myriad of ways when it comes to what I mean, I'm an open book on the internet, and sometimes I have to like catch myself and be like, whoa, like maybe not everybody needs to know about X, Y, and Z. Cause you're right. It opens up the floodgates for people to even like give unsolicited advice, which at times can be really harmful.
Yeah. And I know people 99% of the time mean well, but when you put your soul out there on the internet like that, you just have to be really careful. And I think we can sometimes, I'm like you, sometimes I just find myself word vomiting and I'm like, what am I doing? I don't even know these people. especially with that anonymous piece too, because you know, if you knew enough things about me, you'd be able to figure out who I am. So
totally. Have you had that actually? Have you had any people close to you who like happen to follow you anonymously and then be like, wait a minute, like, is this you?
So funny story. Actually, when I first started Pennies and Purpose, like I want to say it was like maybe 6 months into creating that account, I had posted something on my stories about being like a total germaphobe and some particular habits in that kind of department. And a college friend reached out to me and was like, she like called me out by my real name, was like, is that you? And oh, I didn't realize it was that much of a personality trait, but I've had I've had it happen with a couple of people. I'm sure there are also like a handful of individuals out there that are like, oh, I'm pretty sure this is so-and-so. But for the most part, I would like to think that I've done a pretty good job of staying anonymous. It's hard. It is really hard to post without like showing your face. And like, you have to watch out for everything. Like if I take a video of like my toaster in my kitchen, like I have to be careful about the reflection in like appliances, and it gets really wild.
So back to your family dynamic, how do you feel like growing up with this specific dynamic in your childhood has shaped who you are as an adult person today? How has that come full circle based on how, I guess for me, I believe that our childhood and how we were raised can oftentimes show face in so many different ways in our adult life.
Oh my gosh.
Like, yes. So I'm wondering what that's been like for you.
Yeah, a lot of my time and energy today goes towards curating what I call my chosen family. And that isn't to say that I don't still get some value from like relationships with some of my biological family members. Like, for example, my sister and I are still pretty close. But when you do have a lot of those gaps, right, in your biological family that you really wish you would have pulled the right cards, you just find ways to make up for it with like, you're not your closest friends. And for example, my partner has been a really great member of my chosen family. So I spent a lot of time there. In the past year, what that's manifested as has been a lot of putting myself out there and making friends. Moving to a new city has also really forced me to like, for example, download Bumble BFF and like,
I love that.
Leave the house and put on pants. And it's like really hard sometimes. But what they don't tell you about like turning 30 and like moving into that next era of life is like, you really have to put into all your relationships a lot of work if you want them to stay at the level that like they always have been. It was just so much easier in our 20s and in our college years. So basically I spent a lot of time doing that. Chosen family is really important to me. I find ways to like make up for a lot of those lost memories, the traditions that I wish I would have had growing up, planning, you know, tradition-based events with my friends, doing stuff on the weekends, a lot of that kind of thing, which it's harder than it sounds, I think, sometimes when all you want to do on the weekends is just like cuddle up on the couch and do nothing.
Totally. Yeah. We just passed Easter and you had posted something about, and I don't want to put the words in your mouth, but some of your like religious, not backlash, but like,
yeah.
Can you just talk to me about sort of what you meant? I don't even want to try and paraphrase it.
No, you're good. The religious holidays always have like such loaded, like bring such loaded feelings for me. So for additional context for your listeners, I grew up in a very evangelical background. And so a lot of time that I spent in therapy is unpacking religious trauma. I think for a lot of people, having a religious upbringing can be a good thing. For me, I think it just brought a lot of, there's a lot of black boxes in my past where I just kind of have blacked them out. Religious holidays actually happen to be one of those things. So Easter and Christmas in particular are just so loaded for me. A lot of times that they were just revolving around creating appearances with going to church, dressing up, appearing to be like, you know, this type of family, but knowing what was happening in our actual home life was just such, created such cognitive dissonance for me.
Yeah.
And now that I'm older, like, you know, social media is just such a cesspool of seeing what everyone else's highlight reels look like.
Totally.
It took a very long time to learn that, like, you know, just because someone else is enjoying their Mother's Day or their Thanksgiving or their Christmas or whatever holiday you can imagine doesn't mean that, like, you know, my life is totally screwed up because I don't have that relationship with my family. For Easter this past year, I just kind of realized, wow, my life looks so different than it did 15 years ago, 20 years ago. Like, I have this new opportunity to totally reinvent what those days mean to me, if anything. And so, for example, I'm not a churchgoer anymore, but I think that there is still something to be said about like making the most of an Easter Sunday. You know, we went to the park and walked our dog and just enjoyed the sunshine and saw everyone else also enjoying their day. And it doesn't have to be a bad day anymore. You know, you can always grow out of that. It's never too late to grow out of that. It does take time though, to unlearn some of those negative associations you might have with some bad memories.
To unlearn and then to also reclaim, though. I think it's so powerful that you're in that space where you're like, hold on, wait a second. Like, this doesn't have to only hold negative connotation and some trauma. It still can, you know, that's being human, but it doesn't have to be at the front of what that day is. Yeah, that's really amazing.
There's room for both. You can be sad and mad and really optimistic about what future years might look like.
Yes. I believe that in all facets of life, like the both and like both things can be true and exist at the same time. So speaking of your partner, what about within your partnership with Mr. P, we'll call him as you do on the internet. How do you feel like your family dynamics has brought forth challenging circumstances, I guess, in doing life with him? And in the same breath, actually, how has it helped you? I mean, I know that you specifically chose this person, right? And he chose you back, and they've become a part of your chosen family. So like, that's obviously a really beautiful thing. But yeah, in what ways do you find, I think it's important to ask, I want to just like footnote this, that I think it's important to ask this question for people who have had traumatic family upbringings or what have you, who are entering in or maybe are in healthy partnerships, can still feel some of that, like those triggers and those activations pop up within partnership. And I'm wondering how you sort of navigate that, and also how you celebrate the really beautiful parts too, that maybe you didn't see or witness growing up.
Yeah, definitely. That just makes me think about how, for example, like two people in a relationship will show up to an argument in different ways. I really do believe that like our own family upbringing shapes so much, whether we like it or not, or whether we like how it turns out, it shapes so much of how we navigate like challenging scenarios. So that's actually the first thing I think of. One thing that I really love about my partnership is that he comes from a very big family, not nuclear family, but like, or sorry, not his immediate family members, but a very large extended family. And so I always remember growing up as a child wanting more siblings, more cousins, more XYZ, and like more family members, period, just to feel like I felt a little bit more grounded in a system. And I didn't really have that. I mean, I had my one sister, but the majority of our family, I've actually never met them because they live in a totally different country. And the chances of us ever crossing paths is very slim. And so to like be introduced to this whole other family system with different communication styles and like different traditions and their own quirks, which, mind you, I think it's so much easier to look at literally anyone else's family and see those things as quirks. But when it's your family, it's problems. Like, we're all such victims to thinking like, oh, this is totally just a me thing, or this only applies to our family. And like, we actually have so much more in common, like the traumas that we face growing up, or like the communication issues that we had with our parents. I think we share a lot of those in common. But yeah, I mean, I feel so fully integrated into his family. We do so many things together over the course of the year. Doesn't mean that that doesn't come without its issues and its own quirks, if you will. But it's more than made up for a lot of the family time that I had always wanted growing up, like more than made up.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, it is. Really, it has been really good. I do think, you know, the person or the persons that you choose to partner up with can make such a difference in like feeling like you are grounded in navigating challenges as an adult. I remember being so anxious when I decided to cut ties with, you know, some of my family, what my partner would think, and would this be a problem? You know, some people really do want that. They want their own extended family. And that's not something that I would have been able to really offer if I were to move forward with that choice. And obviously it worked out. You know, he was so understanding about it. And it is what it is. You know, like, we don't get to choose who we're born to and who we're related to, but we do choose how we handle those things. And if that means that I won't have, you know, a totally present mother-in-law someday, then that's okay, because that's not why I'm here. Right.
And I have to imagine, I don't know him personally, but I have to imagine that like almost the opposite is true, that there's probably some like huge layer of respect for him towards you to be able to sever something like that. That's not an easy thing to do. And to say, like, you know what, I choose me and my happiness and my mental health in order to show up as a good partner. Oh, this totally. Kind of has to happen, you know?
Right. Because had I not made that choice, I would not be the same person that I am today. And right. I might not be able to be as present in a relationship. Mm-hmm. And there's probably some dark joke in there as well around, you know, there's one less, you know, fussy mother-in-law to have to deal with down the road. I mean, you know, you can only handle so much of those unwelcomed family encounters. And let me tell you, there would have been quite a few of those with mine. So maybe there's a couple.
You're like, I'm doing you a favor.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So you touched on boundaries for a second, but something that you talk about so eloquently, and I honestly get so excited whenever that's like one of your posts. I'm like, ooh, what's her hot take? It's going to help me. No. But I'd love to actually hear you elaborate on what that word means to you personally and what that looks like in your day-to-day life. Because, I mean, at least for me, I know that this is such an ongoing work in progress.
Yeah.
And I know for so many others listening, but I think it's also important to mention that that word, and more so the action of that word, means so many different things to so many different people. So as it relates to you and your life, what do your relational boundaries look like for you?
Cassandra, my therapist asked me this literal same question yesterday, and I had Ooh. Trouble like, but actually, no, it was practice. Who knew we were going to be talking about this today? Yeah, actually, I knew. that's such a good question. For me right now, boundaries and setting them really looks like learning how to say no. I think for a lot of people, it's this exact same answer. A lot of people are going through this right now. There's a couple really good books about boundary setting too, especially with family. But right now, I have a really hard time saying no to invites to things because, of course, with moving to Denver, I feel like I'm not making the most out of the experience or this season of life if I'm not participating actively. But that's also required me to learn in what mental and physical state can I actually be the most active participant in something. And I cannot say yes to everything if I want to do that. So a lot of it has been being very choosy about what I spend my weeknights doing, because at that point I'm already wiped, what I spend my weekends doing. And then another one that I think is like so underrated is not responding to emails, text messages, and phone calls right away.
My God, this is mine right now. It's like my number one.
And this is going to sound like so silly, and we're such a like a byproduct of our generation right now. But a perfect example of that is, you know how you have like those best friends that you are constantly sending reels to on Instagram?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
And you log on one day and your friend has sent you like 20 of them in a row. And you're like, I think of it as like friend homework. Of course, it's all in good fun. There are no expectations around it. But like, that's the type of person I am. I am like, oh, nope, I got to go and like respond to all these DMs, like all my pennies and purpose DMs. I don't like having a bunch of outstanding notifications. And there's just like this so much urgency that we put on ourselves for these non-critical situations. They are the farthest thing from life or death. And yet here we are like creating responsibilities in what should be like a perfectly fun environment, which is a social media platform. So that's like my kind of one example of the silliest way that not setting boundaries with myself will show up. And it just slowly eats away at you over time.
Mm-hmm. It's honestly, I'm so glad that you brought that up, because I know like speaking of it, it sounds so like, you know, micro, but in the scheme of things, that is something that I like to call like an energy leak, and that builds up over time and then it just floods over and you're like, what the fuck is this energy that I'm carrying around? And then you're like, oh, it's these 30 DMs about something small that like I haven't gotten back to, when it feels so macro.
Yes.
But in the scheme of things, it's not, you know? So I think it's really, it might not feel that important to set boundaries around social media, responding to DMs or your friends' reels or whatever. But that stuff adds up and it turns really into something serious.
Yeah. You know? Or just the stream of like text messages or like in my phone where I'm like, I know I got to respond to that later because I don't want to feel like her to feel like I left her hanging. Oh, here's another one. I don't know. There might be people who think that I'm a terrible person for doing this. I no longer pick up phone calls. Like unless we were actively planning to speak on the phone or if it's like one of my closest friends where I know like the reason they're calling might be for like an emergency scenario. I've got a couple of friends that like just like to, you know, shoot the shit while they're in the car or something. But if I'm not in a mental state to be on the phone, I just won't pick it up.
I think that makes you an amazing person. And maybe it's because I do the same thing. And I'm like, I actually really like that about myself. I like, I've never been a phone person, but Glennon Doyle will talk about this with her doorbell. And it's the same thing for her with her phone. Is she's like, it's really, she says it lovingly because it is, but like, it's invasive. It's like someone sort of showing up, knocking on your door and being like, I'm ready to talk. And you're like, I'm not. Oh my God, I'm like naked. I don't have, you know what I mean? Like I can't have this conversation. So her approach is sort of like, who says, you know, just because someone rings your doorbell or somebody pops into your phone, they do not, you do not owe them a response. It doesn't make you a bad person. It makes you unavailable. That's not a bad thing.
I love that. And it's also like anyone who were to choose to make an unannounced phone call to someone also accepts the responsibility and the likelihood that that other person may not be available in that moment. And a true friend would get that.
Yes. And also if there is an emergency link to this, call me multiple times or send me a follow-up text and I will absolutely, you know, pick it up. But my sister is so good at this too. Like she leads by example and I follow suit almost all the time with like the way that she navigates her life. But like, there is never any bad blood. If I call her 3 days in a row and she doesn't answer, I'm finally like, okay, yeah, she's in it. I'm just going to give her some space. Like that, I think too, comes with time and maturity and, you know, growing into like adulthood and also like having those sacred friendships where there is no, you owe me energy.
Totally.
You know? Yeah.
And I think we can all rattle off the few friends that we can think of on the top of our minds of people who would get that and would, there's no judgment. We just kind of understand like life happens, it gets in the way and I'll get back to you when I'm good and ready.
Yeah. Yeah. This has nothing to do with you actually.
Yeah, exactly. Definitely.
Well, as people can already probably tell just from like, you know, half of this conversation, I want to just take a second to recognize and just like applaud how self-aware you are. This is probably my favorite trait in another human being. I think it's true. I think it's so powerful and really magical to witness someone who can sit with themselves and like truly recognize themselves, even in ways that you've, you know, been kind of funny and self-deprecating. I'm like, that probably makes me a terrible person, but like you in your heart are like, and that's okay. You know what I mean? Like if that's some judgment, that's okay. That takes a lot of inner work, I think, to get there. And also just to be able to like create that touch point within ourselves of like, oh, I noticed that I have some work to do here. So I'm going to go bring that to therapy or whatever. And speaking of therapy, I know that you're a huge advocate for it. And I love how much you love your therapist. What are some of the, let's talk about like more so, this might be hard because I feel like I'm putting you on the spot, but what are some golden nuggets that you feel like you've taken through or taken from the support that you've been given in therapy? That like the ones that have really stood out and you're like, that was a pinnacle shift.
Ooh, that's such a good question. One thing I've learned is never underestimate the impact that a person that maybe you considered a safe space could have had on you. Like, for example, I think I've spent years demonizing the same like two or three individuals in my life and blaming them or my relationships with them for a lot of my issues. And it turns out like it really does take Probably, again, not like the traditional use of this phrase, but it takes a village, you know, to like create a person and to like build someone's experience. And so like family members, for example, or like even relationships that I saw as good ones at the time, and they can still be good in some ways, had some not so great impacts on my development as a child, and my ability to like navigate conflict as an adult. A lot of that came from individuals that I previously would have been like, oh yeah, no, they had no negative impact on me. Mm-hmm. So I don't mean to take this in like a totally negative, you know, direction, but that's been such a weird realization for me to make of, oh, I thought like my relationship with my dad was totally fine. Turns out there's a lot to still unpack there. And we never bothered unpacking it because I didn't think it needed discussion. Right. I thought it was a totally safe zone. And everyone plays a contribution, you know, in the household in raising a child. So I'm paying a lot closer attention, I guess, to all of my relationships, all of the nuances with everyone, you know, in my family, everyone in my life. And that's been really eye-opening.
Absolutely. And I'm sure it's like, I don't want to speak for you, but do you find that it can also be like a little scary because you might recognize relationships where you're like, yeah, this probably isn't one that I should be carrying forward. That's always such like a panicky moment for me where I'm like, I don't want to go through another friend breakup. Like, oh, they're so challenging.
Yes. I'm so glad you brought the phrase friend breakup, by the way, because I think that we don't put friendships on high enough of a pedestal.
Totally agree.
Like, truly, I believe this in my soul, that friendships are the most important relationship of any kind. Like, they, to me, they actually matter more than like romantic partnerships, because they will always be, I mean, they see sides of you that are before, during, and after most of your relationships. And they see you in a different way than, for example, just someone that you're biologically related to, or someone that you're partnered with do. And friendship breakups are like, not, we don't give enough credit to like how hard those are to go through, especially like in our late 20s and 30s, when you're moving into different life stages. You might be moving like geographies, life gets in the way, and you suddenly realize that the things that you thought you had in common have just kind of disappeared over time, because we evolve as people.
Yep.
And then you're kind of stuck realizing, oh, okay, like if that's not going to be a thing anymore, then where do I want to turn for that sense of love and support? And sometimes that means like building new friendships, which is, like we said before, it can be really exhausting.
Or the other, like where I've recognized it too, is where I'm like, you know what, this is like a test for me to have to like turn into like in towards myself. And as cheesy as it sounds, but like really learn how to like befriend myself, because I would notice myself clinging so tightly onto friendships, like especially after a breakup or something like that. And that's not fair to them either to have to coddle. Right.
Yeah.
So I think too, friendship breakups can be really scary because you're also letting go of like, even though it's not really serving you anymore, this like lifeline, this extension,
totally
part of your like support group, where you're having to like kind of, yeah, just like regrow that branch on your own.
Exactly. And they know so much about you, and they knew who you were at this age and that age. And it's tough thinking that you either have to build that within yourself, like you said, or start all over with someone else. It's a lot.
It's a lot. Yeah. And you're right. I don't think it's talked about enough. Maybe I need to do a podcast episode on that.
Yeah. Do it.
So you've also been really open with your journey with medication, like being on it, weaning yourself off, going back on. Can you talk to us about what that journey has been like for you specifically?
Yes, I'm thrilled to. I love talking about medication. I don't know if that's weird, but
You love talking about it.
Yes, we got to demystify it, okay? Like I joke all the time that I am just a puppet held by strings that are actually held by different medications at this point, and therapy and a lot of self-work, okay? But I have been on some variation of an antidepressant, I would say, for the last like decade, and on and off. I found a couple that have worked really well for me, always with the support of a therapist or a psychiatrist or both. both. And there was a point in time last year where I actually felt like I was in a pretty good spot mentally. I had been on the same medication for like, I want to say 4 or 5 years at that point. Mm-hmm. And again, I should preface all of this by saying, please speak to your doctor. I'm not a doctor. I'm the furthest mm-hmm. thing from a medical professional. This is just based on my own experience. But what my doctor had told me was, you know, like, if you have been on a medication for X amount of time and you start like feeling like you've kind of tapered off or you've normalized, and you feel like you'd be okay without it, then yeah, that's probably a good indicator that we can try weaning you. So what I did at the time was I weaned off of this medication and was completely just, I call it raw dogging life. I know that's like a terrible, but like there were no medications in my system. Okay. Like I was just like that kid who walks into your college class with nothing but a pencil, like no backpack. Mm-hmm. Like it felt very odd at first. Cause you know, how do you live life without like the support of pharmaceuticals? Like I don't know, but I felt amazing for like those first couple of months. You can probably tell where this is going. I had a really rough couple of months, like during the depths of winter, which I am sure there was a little bit of, you know, seasonal stuff mixed into that, not to mention the trauma that comes up during the holiday season. And then a bunch of other personal life things were happening at the same time. And had like maybe one of the worst mental breakdowns I've ever had in years. And it felt awful because I was like, man, I thought I was doing great. You know, we were gonna do this without anyone's help, finally. And after a couple of just really, really dark moments, I finally mustered up the courage to find another psychiatrist. And I was like, I don't really want to be here, but I know I gotta be here. Let's talk about what we can put me on or what other mm-hmm. actions we can take. And ever since then, I've been back on meds. I feel amazing. I feel like myself again. And mm-hmm. I guess it's just a testament to the fact that like everyone's journey is going to be a little bit different. Mm-hmm. And sometimes being on medication or off medication can work, but having to go back on it isn't an indicator that you're a failure. Mm-hmm. Or that you weren't trying. It really is, in my case, a chemical imbalance, maybe some genetics thrown in there. And I'm just very grateful that I have the resources and the access to all of the help that I have so that I can nip that in the bud and move on with life as normal.
Totally. And again, clapping back to your self-awareness, like having the self-awareness to be like, something's not right. And I'm not going to like put my pride in front of my mental health, because unfortunately there are so many judgments and stigmas out there it's complete bullshit. But I remember having this total shame spiral for a bit when I was on antidepressants and anti-anxiety for a short while. Like mm-hmm. It was almost like I kept telling myself that I was taking the easy way out, especially being like a pretty spiritual person. I was like, shouldn't I be able to like, you know what I mean? When in fact, the opposite is totally true. I was making such a brave decision in that time frame to heal myself in this way. I was loving myself on like an entirely different level. I'm no longer on them now, but I remember like vowing to myself to never let shame creep in like that again, should I ever need to revisit and go back on.
I had a follower DM me after I had posted about going back on medication, and they said like, why would you ever deny yourself, you know, medication if you had a migraine? And that kind of put it in perspective for me. Like depression is no different than any other illness, you know, mm-hmm. like it's called treatment for a reason. And sometimes you have to take some of those smaller steps before it gets really bad, you know, and we have to mm-hmm. take the even bigger measures. So I try to think of it as no different than treating any other sickness, you know.
I love that.
I would take, you know, some NyQuil or whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm not just going to try to like wing it on my own because it means I'm stronger. I'm just going to be miserable the whole time. And life is too short to like put ourselves up to that.
Yeah. Well, and life is already hard enough on its own. Like
totally.
if we have the resources and, you know, the support to be able to make it softer, like why the fuck would we not?
Yeah, exactly.
One of your posts, I wrote this down because it was one where I was like, it almost made me get teary-eyed, but you wrote, You wrote, "Hey you, it's okay if sunlight, a good diet, exercise, a new hobby, a walk outside, better boundaries, and drinking more water doesn't magically fix your mental health."
Yeah.
And that is literally what I mean. Like, seriously, I just hope that everybody walks away from this episode and goes to find you, because that is what I mean about loving your voice so much and the energy behind your voice. Whether you realize it or not, you're just reminding people and giving them this like unabashed permission slip that it's okay to be human. We all know, for those who have followed me for a long time, that is just like my favorite thing to dissect, is like just being human and like having no shame around it.
Yeah.
And that it's like, it's safe to be human. And
yeah.
Just that, like, while all these self-help tips and stuff are super lovely and oftentimes do work, they're not always the recipe for healing, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think, that I remember that post getting a lot of just engagement, I think. Well, and I remember being really happy that I got a lot of engagement, because the reason I posted that was, I feel like on social media, there's just so much advice. Granted, I'm one of those people too now, right? But there's just so much advice that implies that like everything that your life turns out as is within your control. I think that can be true in some ways, but there are absolutely things that you can't control. And
totally.
I would have loved for that on that day, for my one post, if that was the one thing someone saw that reminded them, like in a sea of other posts that are like, you know, get your ass up, or maybe you need to actually go outside. Exercise is the cure to depression. Like, I hope that they saw that post and remembered, you know, you're probably already trying your best. And there are so many factors that play into how someone is feeling on a given day. And if you need a reminder that it is not just your fault, we're so good at blaming ourselves for everything, then here it is. So I'm glad that one stood out.
Oh my God. It stood out so well. And it's honestly, well, and within being pregnant too, like, people don't really talk about prenatal depression, because like your hormones are literally just like crazy.
Yes. And
when they go low, at least for me, like the lows were low, and I was like, what the fuck is this? Like, no one has told me about this. And yeah. I remember literally reciting your post in my head when I had gone through my toolkit, when I'd done all the things and it still didn't work. I was like, wait a minute. That's okay. Like, A, at least I tried those things. Yep. And B, it's okay if that didn't work today, I'll try again tomorrow. Yeah. You know, but it really did give me this like cloak of ease of like, it's okay. Like, all is well.
Also, like, the body is a complicated thing to live inside, okay? Like,
100%.
I'm sure you're realizing that now more than ever, but
more than ever,
like,
yeah.
Like, I can't control all of these mechanics. Like, there's so many things happening right now without my permission.
I know, right? Well, and speaking of control, you often talk about releasing the grip on like goals and expectations that you have for yourself. I know that I can relate, and that means that, like, no doubt listeners listening can also relate to having like a white knuckle grip on how we think we're supposed to show up, you know, the goals that we think we're supposed to have and accomplish by X age, whatever. Yeah. What has that journey been like for you, surrendering to, maybe not fully, you know, everything's a work in progress, but surrendering to that perfectionism or like certain status quo or a rhythm of life that just kind of like stopped serving you. And you're like, I don't want to live like this anymore, whether it's in your personal life, but you do talk a lot about this within your corporate role.
Yeah. So one, I think we, like, at least in my Instagram community, the people that I engage with the most often, we are obsessed with self-improvement. Can be a good thing, but a lot of times, like, when I'm not in my best state, like, that is not the place that I want to hang out in, because it constantly requires me to think, like, am I doing enough? And absolutely, I'm doing enough. I'm probably doing more than enough, and I need to chill out. And so my goal setting actually is on a much more small level. Like, I try to post about like monthly goals, but knowing full well, I'll probably hit just a few of them. Like, it is never my expectation going in that I am like this constant self-improvement project. And if I don't meet my goals, I've completely failed. They are just supposed to be like little check-ins along the way to be like, am I actually moving my life in a direction that I want, that I want it to look like? And if I'm doing that, then great. Same for work. Like, I work in a very corporate environment. I think the constant messaging that we're getting is, you know, if you ever have 5 minutes of free time, you should fill it with something else. There's always ways that you can add value to our team. But the reality is, like, nobody can operate at 100% of the time. It's leaves less energy for those moments that really do matter when I really need to be on it. And it's not normal for humans to be constantly go, 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 and to show up with like a cheerful smile on their face, only one cup of coffee in their system. Like, that's not normal. And I'm spending a lot of time lately reteaching myself that, like, this is not what humans were intended to do. And it is okay if I need a breather in between, you know, all of my meetings.
Totally. Or if you need to walk during some of your meetings to just sort of like move your body, your bobbling head, you know,
it's like,
no, that's such a good point. And also I think that for the people who white knuckle or, you know, try to over execute and stuff like that, oftentimes if we're not careful, that can seep out in all the wrong ways. You know, it ends up maybe being like a deterrent. I don't know what kind of like industry people listening are in, but even like within personal relationships, like the tighter the grip, sometimes like the greater the distance.
Oh yeah. Or like we've all had that one coworker that like just goes, does so much, like so much extra, and it actually makes them harder, less pleasant to work with. Like we've all had that person on our team.
Totally. And even from the standpoint too of like, I hate the word compete, but like if you have somebody who is always going like 10 extra miles, you're like, how am I even supposed to like coexist with that? You know, it's sort of, it can like deflate the everyone around you in a weird way.
It like really someone is. Who it's contagious and
totally
nobody wants to work with that person. So don't be that person. I'm trying really don't hard not to be that person.
Don't set false expectations for everybody else.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I'm going to segue really quick because I want to touch on this for a moment, but I really love your individual approach to that's a hard word. Your specific approach to minimalism. It's not like this like stark white clean house where everything has a place, yada, 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 which is all good. If that's, you know, how you vibe with
it. That's your jam.
But, yes. I think what happens with some like minimalist accounts out there too, or displays, is that it feels really hard to attain. Mm-hmm. And for some, that's just not realistic and it's not real life. And the fact is that there's not one right way to do minimalism, right? It's a lifestyle. It's not a style. And I think that's like the disconnect. So can you share your take on this and what minimalism, like what that word, what that lifestyle means to you?
Yes, I think minimalism is way more than just what your house looks like. It is how what you choose to keep and what you choose to keep out. So that applies to everything. Like if we're going to talk about boundaries, it's like I am a minimalist in terms of my relationships. We'll coin that term, relationship minimalist. You know, not every relationship should suit you and you don't have time for all those anyway. So like being careful with who I spend my time with and who I text throughout the day. That's one example. Totally. In my house, just having moved as many times as I have in the last few years, like out of necessity, I just cannot afford to have like tchotchkes and like decorations and I don't like throw pillows, things like that. Like maybe in a future life, I can indulge in some of those things a little bit more, but it's just been so functionally efficient to have fewer physical items. And it just makes me feel a little bit lighter. So I'm a minimalist in that sense. Digital minimalism, which I've been meaning to talk about a little bit more on my page, is another big one. We get so many emails. We're inundated with text messages, attachments, photos, like all of that. And it just gets so overwhelming. So I try to stay on top of like which photos, for example, I save in all of my albums. Emails, if it doesn't suit me, it gets deleted. It doesn't get filed away into some other folder. It gets completely wiped. And all of those things, I think, have just like created an environment where I feel like I can breathe a little bit better. And I'm not suffocating under like all of this stuff and all of these like thoughts floating around in my brain. Because the more I delete, the better I can think.
Yeah.
in every aspect. So
it's that's so true. It's so kind true. Of
my, yeah, that's like my approach in a nutshell, but I know everyone's got a different approach to this, a different mm-hmm. style. It's just for me that it ends up being a little less aesthetic and more about like your mentality to things.
Totally. And for the sake of, you know, the vast majority of people, I think with decluttering and minimalism, they start within the home, right? I think that's just like where our brains go. So for the sake of that, since you share a home with Mr. P, would you say that for the most part, you're both fairly aligned with your values around minimalism and consumerism, or has that been something that you've had to work on together?
I think I got really lucky in that my partner happens to be on the minimal side. I don't think he identifies mm-hmm. as anything. Like,
sure.
I don't think a lot of guys do, to be honest. They're just kind of
it's so true
floating around with their three pieces of furniture. But yeah. It was helpful. I think that when we first decided to move in together, we did like kind of an audit of all of our shit, just mm-hmm. audit of how many kitchen utensils do we have? How many pieces of furniture do we have? And then by necessity of the spaces we were looking at, rental wise, like we physically could only contain this much stuff. And so like mm-hmm. it ended up becoming very cutthroat, and then making a cross country move made it even more cutthroat. Like, I don't want to yeah. schlep this three states, you know, up the road. So overall, it's been pretty smooth sailing. There have been a few conversations, I think, where like it's gotten on the more tense side of like, I don't think we need this. And he'll be like, mm-hmm. well, I don't think there's any harm in keeping it. I mm-hmm. am like, I hate storage. Like, I hate leaving things in storage. Just a personal preference. I don't know about you.
Hate it. Even my basement is like mocking me every day. I hate it.
Yeah, I'm just like, why? It's like, if it's out of sight, it's out of mind. And if it's out of mind, then why have it?
100%. I could not agree yeah. more.
So yeah. there's been a little bit of learning and unlearning for both of us, and just kind of figuring out what our groove is. But I will say, like, having a more minimalist approach to our material objects did make like moving so much easier. And like, we got settled into this apartment within 3 days. And I think that is only because
totally. We
didn't have boxes and boxes of stuff.
You're ruthless in execution. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So kind of a decent segue into money here, the last topic that I want to talk about. You still do talk about finance, but it's so much more lax. So
yeah,
you even hid all of like your fancy graphic posts, which we talked about that you used to make mm-hmm. when you first started the account. So can you talk about how this change started to shift for you, or rather like how you knew that you wanted to make the shift?
Yeah, I used to post a lot about investing and saving and paying off debt. And like, those are still topics that are very important to me. And like, I still love talking about them at brunch with friends, you know, but as far as like creating content around it, I just started to feel very uninspired one day. I was on a work trip in another country last year. And I really wanted to like share about what was happening on that work trip and some random thoughts that were passing through my brain at the time, but it didn't fit into the, what do we call it? The grid. It wouldn't mm-hmm. have fit my grid. And I realized at that time, like, what am I doing? Like, this, the whole purpose of me launching this account was so that I could just talk about whatever I wanted. And now here I am like censoring myself because it doesn't fit into this perfect post about like investing. And there are so many amazing accounts that already do a great job at that. And at that point, I started to feel more comfortable just saying, you know what, let's leave it up to those accounts. I think what I want to do a little bit more of is talk about my topics. And I can't do that if I'm like imprisoned by this one specific mm-hmm. aesthetic that I've been trying to go for, although it was fun at the time. So yes, it's definitely gotten more lax. Like you said, I also pumped the brakes a bit on like my own, retiring early plan through a lot of work with my therapist, in which I learned that not working is actually not great for my mental health right now. And so until I can figure that shit out, mm-hmm. I got to cool it on like, you know, trying to fast forward to 10 years from now.
What a good point.
Yeah. Like, if I can't figure out how I want to spend my free time now, what am I going to do without a full-time job in 10 years? Like, I need to work on that part internally first before I, and yes, I'll save money in the meantime, but I'm not doing myself any favors right now by trying to plan for something that I'm not even emotionally prepared for.
Totally. Yeah. No, I love that. And again, it comes down to that like releasing control around, you know, how you thought you should be doing things, and instead being like, wait, what's right for me in my life in this moment, and even 10 years from now. Yeah, I think that's really powerful. Well, and also, so I love the Refinery 29's money diaries. I think I really like it because, oh my, isn't it so great?
Fascinating.
Like, people just want to like see themselves, but they also are so curious and nosy by nature. And that's something that I love that you started doing. You've started just being like, here's what we spent on this trip and here's what I spent it on. And I'm just like, oh my God. Like, I don't know what it is. I can't even really name what it is that I love about it so much other than I think it's another way for like humans to feel seen and witnessed and maybe even not bad about going on vacation and spending X amount of money, you know, because you're like, oh, she's doing it. This person's doing it. I don't know. I just think it's something that I've really enjoyed that you've started doing. I think it makes you, again, just more human, right? And relatable, which is just the best thing on the internet. So speaking of that, enjoying money, like actually spending it and enjoying it, what a concept. I want to talk to you about this because you made a post a little while ago that stopped me in my tracks about like giving yourself permission to actually enjoy your money and to use it to create a life that you truly love. And I think this is so important. So can you talk about how this mentality came into play for you? Like, did something specific happen where you were like, okay, enough. I have to like actually go and enjoy my life and not feel guilty for pulling out of this fund or pulling out of this fund?
Right. I think a lot of listeners can probably relate to growing up in an environment where scarcity mentality was like at the forefront. Like, we grew up in environments where saving money was like the most important thing because you had to make ends meet and pay the bills and, you know, just feed yourself. But for a lot of us also now, we have the privilege of looking at our financial situations and thinking, okay, maybe I don't actually need to be like giving myself the bare minimum. I also, again, that really depends on like your personal financial situation. So that's going to look different for every individual. But for me personally, I kind of had to have like a come to Jesus moment with myself within the last year of, okay, we don't plan to have children. We don't plan to probably move cross country again. I really hope to God not. We don't plan to do a lot of these things that could have financial impact. What might we be able to do with that instead of just hoarding it? Because our knee jerk is to hoard it. Because when you feel really out of control or insecure about your future, like you always have, the tendency is to be like, well, let me just stuff it all under a mattress. Don't worry, there's not actually a bunch of money under my mattress. That would be unwise. but with no actual insight into like what you're going to spend it on. And it's just so much, it's like delayed gratification because we're comfortable doing that with money.
Yeah.
And it's the most like societally like smiled upon approach. Mm-hmm. But for people like me who have a hard time spending money and feel guilty every time they do it, it takes a lot of thinking through all purchases twice, not in the traditional sense of like, I need to not spend it, but the other way around. Like, why would it be a bad thing for me to buy this thing for myself or to go on this trip?
Wow. Yeah. That's actually a really powerful way to switch it.
Yeah, it is a little bit opposite world, you know, and there are some purchases that are easier than others. Like I rarely regret now that first moment that you hit purchase on flights to a vacation. Mm-hmm. That one stings a little bit, but I've never regretted actually taking a vacation with my partner or with my friends. Like there are some that are just easier than others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's so true. I also find it like incredibly frustrating how money can be used actually, like how it's often used to shame people, to like back them into this corner of like not enoughness unless you buy this thing or consumerism is so important, of course, for the economy. But there's such a fine line between like living the life we truly ultimately want to live, right? Like the life that we daydream about and paint pictures about in our minds, and then the life that we feel like we need to live to keep up with the Joneses or to be respected or taken seriously.
Yeah. Yeah. It's exhausting. And like, I feel like everyone is a Jones now.
100%. Even if they're really like trying not to be, it's like, it becomes, you have to seriously do some deep reprogramming and like unlearning to separate yourself from like being talked to by the internet or TV or marketing. It's really yes. hard. And that's kind of yeah. gross.
It really is. I spend a lot of time like hitting not interested, that button on like ads now.
Totally.
I cannot go anywhere without being advertised to. And I hate it because 90% of the time it's something that I actually would want.
Like, right. You're doing a good job.
Yes. They know what I want. Okay. I just don't want to see that right now. So, yeah. Pro tip is to unfollow anyone that is constantly or mute anyone mm-hmm. that is constantly making you feel like you could always buy a little something extra. Those are not typically like when I'm talking about encouraging myself to spend in a way that suits my lifestyle. Those aren't the purchases I'm thinking of.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm so glad you said that because there is, you're not saying like, oh, by creating the life that you truly want to live. I'm not saying like buy all of the brass gold aesthetic, you know, yeah. kitchen gadgets. You're talking for anyone who's not catching on, which I'm sure you are, like we're talking more like the deep rooted core things, like what makes you feel alive, like what brings you personal gain and like value and supports your mental health. Like what are those things? And like you nailed it with travel. It's like, it's a really hard purchase to buy at first.
Exactly.
But you always walk away feeling more fulfilled and more filled up. So those are the things to recognize.
Yeah. For some people that might be a new car or a house.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. Okay. So to close out this episode, we're going to do a quick little Q&A. Are you okay on time?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. So you and I both put out a question box on Instagram where people could submit questions for me to ask you kind of all around the different topics that we talked about today. The response was amazing. I'm really excited.
Good. I'm excited.
So yeah, people love you out there, I swear. So feel free to expand or, you know, make them short, whatever feels good to you. So we got a few on the topic of money. So I'm going to start there. So someone asked, what are some of your favorite things to spend money on? Can I guess one?
Yeah.
Your tattoos.
Tattoos. Yeah.
I'm living vicariously. Oh, it's so beautiful. I love it.
You know, yeah, that one's a, So tattoos are expensive. I will say, I think I've dropped like a few thousand on tattoos mm-hmm. in the last like couple of years. I have cooled off on those for now, but I'm sure mm-hmm. the inspiration will strike again soon. Tattoos is definitely one of them. I would say health and fitness is probably a close second, like in terms of categories. Like I never think twice about like, you know, like my Peloton memberships or equipment that freaking walking pad that I can't shut up about lately. That's a big one. Things that like will enable me to hopefully live longer. So I'll kind of phrase it that way.
Yeah.
Travel is one. My partner and I try to do like at least one fun trip with a couple of our other friends every year that like requires us to go out of the country. So we're in the process of trying to figure out what country we want to go to this year. Stuff for my dog, you know, my little child, is a no-brainer. And, this year I would say another one is just experience spending. So not necessarily like traveling outside of the country or anything major like that, but like signing up for classes in the area or like pursuing new activities. Like I've recently taken up doing paint by numbers at home.
Cool. I've been wanting to do that.
They're so, I highly recommend. They're so soothing. Okay. Cool. Like I've got one right now of Danny DeVito. that one episode of
What I was always funny.
Danny DeVito. Yeah. I mean, there's lots of wild options out there on the internet. Take a look. But lots of like activity spending and like trying to pursue new hobbies. So, and that requires some money sometimes. Sorry,
Mr. Pig going skiing now that you live in Denver. Like, that's amazing.
That is definitely experience spending too. Yeah, it's also on the body, but like taking advantage of where we live and making the most of that, I would say is top tier for personal spending right now.
I love it. And again, notice how almost all of those things like actually fill up a person's soul, not like add to clutter on the counter, which no shade, no judgment. I'm just pointing out
it is nice not to have to dust my spending, like the results of my spending, or like have to eventually declutter it. So that's why experience spending, I think, is so much easier for a lot of people.
That's so true. Yeah, because you spend it and you had the experience and then it's done. There's nothing like tangible that you're kind of holding on to and having to like manage or take care of after the fact.
Right. It's just in your brain.
Yeah. So the next question is, trending beliefs around money and finance that you wish would go away.
Oh, this is so interesting. One, that you have to have a certain savings rate. I don't know how deep anyone is into the personal finance community, but like when you go deep enough into that rabbit hole, I think that's a common like term that you see a lot of people talking about. I think it's great if, you know, if that's one of your goals, so be it. More power to you, but I don't want anyone to think that that is like, if you're not saving half of your paychecks every month, that you are being irresponsible with your money. It's also very closely related to like actually how much you are earning, because obviously it's easier to save more the more money you're making.
Right.
And then let me think. Anything that kind of falls under the hustle mentality, I
agree.
Leave it. Life is so short. We don't need to constantly be doing all these side hustles and monetizing our hobbies. Like what an easy way to suck all the fun out of it.
So well said. So well said.
Not everything needs to be a job. We need to learn how to do some things just for the fun of it.
That's been a huge thing for me. Actually, Joe and I were just talking about that, even with like the podcast. You know, for a while I took a step back because A, it's a lot of energy, but then B, I had this crutch of like, it's not even monetizing. Like, it's not like I make money from it. And then I had this come to Jesus moment, for lack of better words, and was like, wait, but the reason I do this in the first place is because I love it. Like, I'm not doing it to make money off of it. If that happens organically, cool. But like, that's not, like, I shouldn't feel that resentment when that wasn't why I started it.
Right. And making money off of something is not the only way for it to bring value.
Exactly. Yeah. So sort of in the same vein of the previous question, another person asked how they can stop impulse shopping if they have that crutch. So let's, for the sake of time, maybe like 1 to 2 tips to help them sort of start to
I have a personal tip that I talk about quite often. Create a Pinterest board called wish list. Anytime you save something or you see something, instead of adding it to cart, add it to your wish list. You can always come back to it later. You'll remember where to find it. Give it like a week. And 9 times out of 10, at least for me, I'm like, oh, I'm good. Like it's,
sometimes I attest to that. Yeah.
Like I'm just feeling emotional that day and I just want to buy something, but like a lot of times just saving it to a spot, it can be like a Google Doc or whatever you want. It just scratches that itch of feeling like I wanted ownership over the idea of the objects.
Totally.
And then I'm good.
It's like a little dopamine hit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's research behind that, by the way, like adding to cart.
Oh, I believe it. I believe it. Well, it's like, and it's like not depriving yourself of the need, whether you voice it as good or bad, you know, same with like a craving, like have half a cookie. You don't have to have the whole box, but don't deprive yourself of having like half of it or one of them, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I love that tip. And I can say for certain that it works because I was the queen of impulse spending and that is now my go-to.
We've all done it.
Yes. So someone else said, I'd love to hear her advice for someone in their 20s who has no idea what to do or where to start when it comes to budgeting. Get her budget worksheet. It's amazing. I'll link it in the show notes. I'm obsessed with that spreadsheet.
I love it.
It's so easy to use. Anyway, she said, I was never taught how to budget, spend, or anything. I'm just winging it.
Oh, yes. I would definitely start with a budget. Doesn't even have to be mine. Although like, yes, we'll happily plug the link to it. It's free if you would like to download it. There are so many other resources out there for types of budgets to use. So like it may take time. Give yourself grace to figure out the system that will work for you. Just because like Mint isn't your favorite doesn't mean that like you have to resign from budgeting ever. But like that's where I would start, is start tracking your spending. Make it a little bit more on the manual side, because if you just have it linked up to like your bank account, you'll never actually see it happening. And it's just so easy to like, let it go on autopilot.
Yeah.
If you actually force yourself to like write down every single transaction that happens every day. Do it for like a month. Start there. Mm-hmm. It can be very eye-opening, like where you're putting all of your money. And from there, you can say, okay, I'm currently spending $500 on this particular category. Am I happy with that? Is that higher than I would like? And then you can adjust from there.
So true. The power of writing it down or typing it out is like, I mean, that is where I think real change can actually occur, is when you are, it's like a radical sense of responsibility, and you can feel it in your body when you're typing it. You're like, oh my God, I spent how much on, you know what I mean?
I went to Starbucks for the sixth time this week. Okay. You really do have to pace yourself. Maybe I got chill.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Okay. A couple around mental health, family, et cetera. Someone said, how do I find the right therapist? It feels like speed dating and I'm exhausted.
I wish I had a better answer for this, because I totally feel this listener's pain. I have been through countless therapists where it just clearly wasn't the right fit. And it sucks that it takes a couple of sessions to realize that, especially if you have to do that whole elevator pitch about like all your traumas during that first hour.
It's a first date. Like,
And I'm like, can I just give you like a PowerPoint? Like, you just flip through the slides. Let me know if this is something that you'd be interested in working on. But yeah, like for me, I always go through first my insurance provider, who's actually within network. If you don't have that luxury available to you, then of course it's a matter of figuring out like, one, is this person's pricing within like my range, something that I'm comfortable with? And then two, like, does it say on their bio, usually they have like a website where the therapist's bio will indicate like what issues they've worked with. And it helps if they have experience working with patients that have similar issues as yours. So like, I always looked for someone who had a specialization in like religious trauma, family relationships, LGBTQ issues. Like, you can find someone hopefully that is a little bit more comfortable talking about your issues versus just some random person in the abyss.
Such beautiful advice. And I will add to that too, and say like the specifics of what you're looking for, so important. And then two, if they don't already offer it, like a consult call, asking for that 15-minute call instead of sitting through an hour session just to find out that you're like, A, I really can't stand this person's voice for some reason, or B, like you're missing the mark. You know what I mean? So
totally
kind of, taking advantage of your time, and most people will always do that for you.
Yeah. That is such a valid question.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. Same. Someone said, how to accept that a family member or a family relationship may never be the positive one you long for. We kind of touched on this a little bit early on.
It's definitely it's a grieving process of its own. I know grief can take so many different forms, but that is one that I'm also actively working through right now. And it really helps to find other people that might be going through similar things. Like, some of my closest friends are actually the byproducts of talking about like family relationship issues. And it's so nice to know. Of course, I don't take pride in anyone else's misery, but it's so nice to know that there are other people out there going through similar things. Yes. Because when you go through like family relationship issues, like it's so hard not to feel like you're the only one. And just finding one other person out there that is like, oh my gosh, I've had the same problem with my parent or partner or whatever, just like goes a long way in, one, having someone to talk to about it. And then two, remembering that like you have, there are other people out there that can also provide support throughout the journey.
So well said. Okay. Two more questions. One is, how do I make decisions around moving cities and starting again? I'm in awe of how you do it.
Oh, this is, moving is hard. Moving it's cities so is really hard too. I'm like tired of it. I've moved cities like 3 times in the last 4 years. I don't think anything makes it less hard, but, making a plan for it was really helpful for me. Like, putting it all on a spreadsheet, especially if you're the type of person that like feels very anxious when they're out of control of a situation, finding what you can control helps. So like for me, I laid out like all the things that I need to do in this city, all the things that I need to square away when I actually get to the new city. If you're in the stage of still trying to figure out like which city to move to. Also, like there was a spreadsheet for that, like runner up cities or like places that I'd be open to living in, having the conversation with. Exactly. Like there's just so many things to think about. But when it actually comes time to like make the transition, I would say put it all on paper, you'll feel a lot better and it'll feel less daunting because it won't just be floating in your head anymore.
Totally. You're like giving it air and giving it a place to live outside of yourself. That's so smart. Exactly.
Yeah. So take it out of your brain.
Yep. Okay. I'm going to end on this question because I thought it was so beautiful. I loved it so much.
Okay.
How do we approach fear of investing in ourselves if luxury has not been securely modeled?
Can you read that again?
Mm-hmm. How do we approach fear of investing in ourselves if luxury has not been securely modeled?
Yeah, this kind of goes back to like our discussion about growing up with scarcity mentality. Mm-hmm. I think that takes a lot of time. One, I think everyone is deserving of little bits and pieces of luxury throughout their life. Everyone is deserving of that. But it can take a while if you've never like had a good example to look to of someone who treats themselves every once in a while. So maybe a good starting point, because I'm a big fan of baby steps and not doing a full 180 overnight, is finding like little ways to treat yourself that don't feel like totally out of the normal for you. So it doesn't always have to be like a like expensive spending, you know, like it can be.
I love that.
Luxury can take the form of like time to yourself, for example. So maybe start there. Like you don't even have to spend a single dollar, but maybe taking a day off for yourself or doing something nice for yourself that you normally wouldn't do. Yeah, I think that would be my starting point. It doesn't have to always be in terms of like what's coming out of your wallet. It can be acknowledging that one, you are deserving of nice things. But also that nice things don't have to be material objects either. They can be experiences, they can be moments, they can be a date night with your partner.
Totally.
Even if, unfortunately, that wasn't what you always had to look up to growing up.
Yeah. And I think too, it just reminded me of something because I had a lot of fear or resistance around self-care. Like I always wanted to get massages, especially being a freelance photographer for so long. My body was like aching. Yeah, but I was still like, who do I think I am to be able to go and spend like $200 on a massage every month?
Yeah.
And so what I did was, it still involved spending money, but I would start by going to like one of those little reflexology places where you get like the foot massage and the back massage for like $40. So for me, I was still investing in myself, being touched, being tended to, my aches and pains were being addressed. And then as that got more comfortable to do that, my self-worth was like coming up. You know what I mean? It was like, so then I graduated to being like, oh, I absolutely deserve the $200 massage every month. So also like those baby steps, those stepping stones to, it doesn't have to like, you don't have to like rip off the bandaid and throw $200 to the wind, but find small ways to sort of get comfortable with the idea of treating yourself in the ways that you want to.
I love that. You basically created like a safe gateway for yourself.
Yeah. And if like your thing is like, you don't think you deserve this like one handbag or something, like, again, no shade. If that's like what your hang up is, look on Poshmark, like look on secondhand sites, like you can still get that thing, you know,
it's
I think the practice of luxury and giving yourself luxury, it doesn't always have to be this like huge price tag or whatever to give it value. Yeah.
Yep. There's ways to inch towards it without like ripping the bandaid off the first day.
Exactly. Yeah. Ugh, thank you so much for being here. I know we went over time, but I'm so happy that this worked out. I adore you. And I'm just so happy
for everybody
to get a taste. Yes.
So, it was time well spent, in my opinion. I love talking, you know, I love talking about this stuff. So thank you for giving me a place to speak my mind and share about my experience. You ask fantastic questions. Thanks to the listeners for their very good questions. It's definitely been a journey and I'm excited to see where this account goes and for your account as well and your podcast. So happy to speak on some of these topics. I think they're really important.
Yeah, same. Agree. Thanks again.
So you can find Val over on her Instagram at Pennies and Purpose, PENNIES and Purpose, PURPOSE. I will put that in the show notes below. And I have to say, I know I mentioned this towards the end of the episode, but as someone who has it, her expense tracker is available. It's free to you if you want it. It is also donation-based, so a pay what you can type thing. And it is so good. It's incredibly easy to use, and it just... it doesn't feel overwhelming or rigid like some of those budgeting platforms can. So if you've been looking for a clean, straightforward budgeting system to help you keep an eye on your money while still having fun and living your life and spending your money on what you want, definitely check it out. I'll include it in the show notes. Val has no idea that I'm plugging this. So again, it is a super authentic review from someone who's been using it for the past like 6 months. So thanks for tuning into this episode. I hope you found it as helpful as I did, and I can't wait to see you back here next week.